Accession number 9742, Reel 1.
Mr. Barrett, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Barrett?
Here in Greenock.
Which year was that?
The 24th of January 1919.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a crane driver.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
What did you take up?
On leaving school, I was a message boy in the cooperative, and then I went into the yards as a apprentice driller, in the shipyards, apprentice iron driller.
So why did you join the Marines?
Well, to be honest, I went up to join the Navy. And when I went up to Bath Street, the chief petty officer was there. He says, they're looking for Marines. He says, and you're about the same, the right height for it. Do you not fancy the Marines? I said, well, yes, okay then. And from there, that was me on my way to being a Marine.
Did you ever regret it?
Regret it. Regret leaving after my 12. I have done that. I wanted to get out after the war. And then when I was out, I felt I'd made a faux pas and should have stayed on for my 22, as it was then.
To get a pension?
To get a pension. But at that time, after the war and that, you had, say, enough light, you know. But I'm thinking back, I should have stayed in.
When was it that you joined the Ajax?
Actually, I was put under orders for in October 1937. You have that training thing where you know the detachment is formed. And you do training, etc. As a detachment of Marines, Captain Prince Sheridan, he was the adjutant and the dealer at the time. I was a deal. He took over Captain of Marines. And from then we worked to October till January. We actually joined in January 1938 at Portsmouth. That's when we joined the Ajax. But previously we were under orders for her. So to speak, you were in the orders for the Ajax and you were formed as a detachment and trained as a detachment for joining the ship, done a lot of revisionary work, that you'd done as recruits, etc. And joined her in January 1938.
What kind of a ship was she to serve on?
I thought she was, looking back, she was a very clean ship, efficient ship, and with a skipper who was thinking on it and very efficient, and he was an ex-gunnery officer, and we did quite a lot of working up, doing evolutions, as they called them, and things as such like that, for preparedness for war, you're always doing thing where you'd be sitting in the mess deck and all of a sudden it would be Marines put out collision mat, something like that, and that made everybody high up one deck and out collision mat, and they were kept quite a very efficient ship, I would say, having served on others after it. I would say it was a very efficient ship.
And you think that was because of the captain, do you? Or was there another reason?
Well, saying that, the Captain of Marines was an ex-adjutant at the RM Depot in Deal when I was there. And he was an efficient man. As most adjutants that come out of RM Deal are. They're really top-notch men as a rule, and from the a Marine's point of view, he was, he kept you on your toes, so to speak, like, you know.
Was she a happy ship or not?
I would say a happy ship. Well, yes.
What was the attitude of the men to the officers? Were they respected or not?
Well, we mixed more with the officers, I think, than what the thing maybe did the seamen and that did. But our officers, we got on all right with our officers. There were two of them, you know, Captain Marines and a Lieutenant Diath, was his name. Spelt D-E-A-T-H. Death, we call him. Lieutenant Death.
To his face, or...?
No. No, it was Sir to his face. He didn't say that.
Now, can you remember the declaration of war, and can you remember what your reaction was when Chamberlain announced that we were at war with Germany?
Yeah, well, the declaration of war, we got it, as far as I can recall, we got it at, I think it was about 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, we were cruising off of Rio. Everybody knew something was coming, like, you know, and we went into Rio de Janeiro. And I don't know, we started getting ammunition, etc., and stored the ship after we'd left Rio. My memory serves me right. They cleared lower deck, and that's when the captain informed us. You know, he read out the fact that the country was now at war, and that put us on a... They read out the Official Secrets Act and another act had something to do with war, like, you know. I just can't remember exactly what they called it. And that was it.
Did he assemble all the ship's company
All of the ship's company went on the quarter deck. After, you know, that was on the after end of the ship. All the ship's company were there.
And when you'd all dispersed, how did you and your shipmates react to the news that you were at war?
Well, we felt we were, like a lot did. Now we'll get into these people and it'll all be over shortly. That's the way we felt at that particular time. And shortly afterwards, in fact, I think it could be recorded that the Ajax was one of the first ships to fire her guns in anger. Admittedly, only a merchant ship. And I think it was, its name was a Carl Fritzen. And she would stop for us and be fired across her bow, 4-inch, fired the 4-inch across her bow, then she stopped. And the davits, now you can see them coming ashore, the crew jumping into the davits. We sunk her. And I think shortly after that, about another day or two after that, we caught another ship called the Linda. And later on, we caught a ship which we believed was a supply ship for the Admiral Shear, as we thought it was. You know, a pocket battleship, the Usakuma. We sunk her as well. We went aboard her. She was a liner, but the people ashore sent information, you know, that she'd left, I think it was Buenos Aires at the time, but one of the South American ports in that area, Montevideo. We sunk her, and we were going to put a prize crew aboard her, but when we got aboard her, she was a big ship, you know, a passenger liner. She had lots of stuff on her. And when the boarding party got aboard, I found out that they'd opened the seacocks and smashed the valves, like, you know.
Were you in the boarding party?
No, not personally, no. But there were Marines in it. And he had told us, like, you know, the boarding party was generally composed of so many stokers who attended to engine rooms, seamen and signalmen, a couple of signalmen and marines, you know, to act as soldiers, or I'll put it that way, and to more or less, if it was anything going to start, they would open up on the crew. They carried their rifles, machine gun. There were only, I'd say, roughly maybe about 10 Marines.
So you had a lot of German captives aboard ship, did you?
We did, yes.
And what impression did you get of them?
Well, I can't remember. I was sentry on them, and they were housed in the recreation space, you know, the seamen's recreation space up forward. Some of them spoke English, but I'm not quite sure which ship it was, but there was an SS officer aboard, and I remember this bosun, I think he was, of this particular ship, I'm not sure as I say, saying to me, he is an SS officer. I was in the recreation space with, you know, armed like. So I told the Captain Marines, I says, there's an SS officer there. And I understood he was sent for and put away from the crew, separated from the crew. On the whole, they were friendly.
Why do you think that the German seaman pointed out the SS man?
I can't really. I would say perhaps they may be looking for the future if they get caught. If by chance they get free in that, there may be repercussions. That's the only thing that I could think of. Because the old fella that told me this, there were two or three of them, in fact, that spoke English. He had been in a concentration camp, the old fella that told me. He had been in a concentration camp. Or friends of his had been there, but I think I'm right in saying that he was in 1934, 36 or something. And maybe that's why he told me. He was he was a mate on the particular ship. I'm not sure which one it was. It was one of the three.
You said they were quite friendly, but did they seem defiant or frightened or what?
Some of them, the two or three of them got what I would call a bit stroppy, you know, using naval terms.
In what way, stroppy?
Well, looking at you, you know, there was more of the younger element. The elder element, people about the age of myself, they were looking at you, you know, you were keeping an eye on them. In fact, when I started yabbering, I had an idea he was yabbering at me, and I just up with a rifle and told him to stop it, told him to break up, like, you know. That's the only one.
Did you ever have any trouble with them?
No. No.
So they obeyed you?
Oh, they obeyed. I mean, they were wanting to go to the toilet. There was another sentry there. He took them to the toilet. They wanted to go anywhere, like, you know, they didn't have the freedom of the ship. They were taken out for exercise on the forecastle. But we put them ashore in the Falkland Islands, these prisoners, and we transferred some to, I think it was a Linda or the Alwyn, the oiler that was supplying us with oil in the River Plate. You know, we couldn't get into neutral ports. We weren't allowed to get into a neutral port once in 3 months, so that meant if we went into Rio, we couldn't get any money. We could go back to Rio till 3 months had elapsed, same with Montevideo. You know, if it was a neutral country, and where we were operating there, when the South Atlantic. So the oil used to come out to the banks, and we would go in and oil the ship, like, you know, outside the neutral territorial waters. Like, we would oil the ship there, and we put some on there, and Some of them went down, the rest went down the Falkland Islands.
Now, coming back to when war was declared, you gave the impression that you and your shipmates felt very confident about the outcome of the war.
We did. There was nobody like us. That's the way we felt.
Nobody like the Ajax,
you know? That's it. We're a very proud ship.
Now, can we go on to the hunt for the German raider in the South Atlantic? And can you tell me what you recollect about how the Ajax engaged in the hunt for it?
Well, I mean, we didn't, not being tales, telegraphists and that could tell you more, like, you know, but we didn't know we were going northeast unless we woke up in the morning and we'd look at the sun and say, well, we're going west now, where are we going east at night? But after the war, I met a fellow, in fact he doesn't live very far from here. He was on a ship called the Dornoch, and he was telling us this would be early on September, early after the outbreak of war, and he was telling me that I think the name of the ship that sunk was the Clement, and she had just missed the. They were going to Pernambuco at the time, you know, that's in Brazil. And he was telling me, well, I can remember us being up there, because they used to fly off the Sea Fox maybe once, twice a day. We'd fly her off, might miss a couple of days, and we'd know that we were searching for, you know, enemy craft, like. But then we went down. You could always tell by the temperature, like, you know, if you were going up towards the tropics, you knew you were going up to the north part of South America, like, you know. If you were going down south, then you were going into cold clothing, you knew you were further south. But I think we patrolled quite a lot of the South American coast, of that coast, like the east coast of South America.
Did you know personally at the time that you were hunting for a pocket battleship?
Yes. Not immediately, but the news there was a pocket battleship on the loose, and it was thought that she was the Admiral Scheer, I think it was. I think that's what they thought it was, Admiral Scheer, because apparently the Graspe and the Admiral Scheer had left Germany before the outbreak of war, and were in that vicinity. But the Admiral Scheer, I think, was further north.
But what did you and your shipmates think when you heard that you were after a battleship, with it being such a powerful ship in comparison with yours?
Well,
did it worry you?
We were always within touch of each other, I would say. I mean, in saying that, when the Achilles had joined us from New Zealand and the Exeter, and that, you're always within days of each other, like, you know, you could meet up and form a squadron, you know, and operate as a squadron. That was my opinion, you know, after on thinking the after way they must have been operating. Plus the fact they were cruisers operating from Cape Town at the same time. I didn't know that. But I remember one time, the reason why I remember it most is because I happened to work on the destroyer. She was built locally, the Hotspur was the name of the destroyer. The Hotspur and two destroyers, and I said, goodness. So we must be close to somewhere. But apparently they were in the company with one of the county class cruisers. But I always remember meeting the Hotspur in a hostel, I think it was, hostel, H-class destroyers. And we supplied them with fuel. But we were, so there was a, putting two together, you could see that there was movement. There was operations taking place, like. And when it, to come back to the day before, we actually ran into the Graspy. The Commodore, he cleared lower deck and told us that this ship, Pocket Battleship, was on the loose in the South Atlantic, and she'd also been in to the Indian Ocean, but his ship had got word off that she was being attacked by a Pocket Battleship, and that was in the South Atlantic. I think the name of the ship was the Doric Star, and he told us that this Doric Star, but he felt, this was Commodore Harwood, he felt that if she was going to have a bean feast and try and catch quite a number of ships, which a pocket, you know, merchant ships, a pocket battleship can make a mess of them in no time, he would head for the Plate, River Plate. So he said he transferred his flag aboard us and formed the two divisions, the Exeter and she carries 8-inch guns, and the Ajax and the Achilles, the other division, and they formed a plan of attack. Like, in fact, we exercised the plan of attack should we run into her. And then he did say, I may have got it wrong, I think this was a few days before we actually met her, but the day before we met her, he cleared lower deck and said, if the Graspy, Admiral Shearers, I think it was, the Pocket Battleship is coming, we should see her at dawn tomorrow. And as it so happened, he was dead right.
What was the atmosphere on the ship when he announced that you...
We were quite confident we could beat her. We were quite confident, although we knew we were relying a lot on the Exeter, because she could range her. She could take her on and range. We couldn't, I mean, we were a few thousand yards short, you know, our maximum... At maximum elevation, we would never have hit her, like, you know, and even then the shells would be becoming a little bit ineffective, you see, you know, further away. And we would have thought the Exeter would be able to take her on, like, you know.
Can we go on to the actual day when you ran into the Graspy, and can you tell me in as much detail as you can recollect what you remember of that day, starting from the beginning?
Yes, I was telling you about my mate, Pat Spurgles. We were wardroom attendants, and we always closed up for dawn action stations. And we'd closed up for dawn action stations, and we were going down to the officer's wardroom, you know, to get the table set and that ready for breakfast. And it wasn't worthwhile going back in your hammock or that, you just... And we were on our way down the passageway when the alarm went, and you know, for access stations. We said, this must be it. So Bats was on the turret, I was on the fore hinge, and he ran up the turret, I ran up to the fore hinge. We just got on the fore hinge gun deck when a salvo from the Graspy fell a little to her stern, and that was action starting, like, you know. And we seen the Exeter open fire, and she was away to her port quarter, so maybe 5-6 miles away, like, you know. This was Admiral Harwood's plan of attack. And after about 20 minutes, maybe, It's hard to determine the length of time, but after about 20 minutes, I was, we seen the exits, just a big ball of smoke, black smoke. And we said, that's the exit I had it. That left us and the Achilles. But at that time, we were going in and out, like, you know, steaming in, laying smoke screens, etc., and coming out to get out to try. When we went in to draw the fire off of Exeter, any close range, I think I heard it said 5,000 yards, which to me, standing on the 4-inch gun deck, I would say they're not far out, because I didn't realise it was such a big ship at that time. We let loose the torpedo tubes below us. They fired off torpedoes at that time. We went in bow on to the Exeter, like, you know. We swung round, as we were lying ahead. We swung round and Achilles and ourselves went in bow on. I believe that's when we got hit, the Marines turret got hit, and the aftermath was shot away. And I think about a couple of casualties, you know, with shrapnel at that particular time. And then we withdrew. When we withdrew out of range again, under cover of the smoke screen, the thing with when we come out of the smoke screen, Graspy seemed to be turning away. But it's a very important point, I thought, because as I say, I knew Lieutenant Kearney and Lieutenant Lewin well, being a WRA, and they were up there spotting our fall of shot. In fact, the 4-inch guns never fired a shot because they were afraid of the 4-inch guns firing a shot. They would stall, it would put off the spotting of the 6-inch guns, which was the heaviest armament we had. So the 4-inch guns never actually fired anything at the Graspy.
So your turret didn't fire?
Our guns never fired. Although we were there, like, you know. And the Graspy made smoke. And I come over the tannoy that it seems the Graspy is withdrawing. So we kept out of range and shadowed us for the rest of the day, except up to just before dusk, and we started closing in, and the Achilles went away into waters. By that time you could see land, like, you know, you could see Uruguay, and the Achilles went in close shore, and we were at an advantage because we were lying to the east of the Graspy, and she was looking into thing way. So the Achilles got a wee bit too close, and she turned around and let go a couple of broadsides at the Achilles, but we just let her go. We got a signal saying that she'd sunk an emergency ship, and we'd be better to go and pick up survivors, but that was a ruse.